Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is a Lip Media podcast.
Sit, boo boo, sit, boo boo, sit.
Grr, arr.
Good dog.
That's some bad hat hair.
It's a cool show.
Get any of that?
Not a doctor.
Bye, have a beautiful
frumula.
Clarm, no, we're about to clarm, no, we're about to clarm.
Hello and welcome to Hunting Seasons, the podcast that dares to binge watch, deep dive and break down a season of television each and every episode. I'm Broderick Gordis.
I'm Damask Leary.
And today we'll be discussing The Great Season 1. Damask Leary, are you The Great Season 1 today?
What? That was terrible. I am good today. My little puppy and my cat are slowly getting friendlier.
So oh, nice.
That's pretty great
news. What does that look like at this stage?
Well, today they both slept on the couch, one on either side of me. So that's pretty good.
So you're still the buffer.
I'm still the buffer.
But they're like...
They're not spooning yet, but one step at a time.
That's the ultimate goal.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Very good.
How about you? How are you?
I'm good. I'm a little bit tired, if I'm being honest. I'm ready for a break. It's been a heck of a year.
Is this how you're telling me that the podcast is over?
That's it. You know what? I think it's done. I think we're
done.
I'm ready. I don't know. It's been a year. It continues to be a year.
It's June.
It's June. And it's been what a year. But I did get to do something fun last night. I got to record a very long episode of the Dialogue Options video game podcast with Joel and Kyron and our friend Ben, talking all about Final Fantasy VII Remake, which if you're a Final Fantasy fan or you're a fan of Dialogue Options, or maybe if you're a fan of me, you should go listen to when it goes up there. It should be out either now or in the coming days. So look out for that.
Beautiful.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. It was good. It's just 3 hours of us going absolute batshit crazy.
Sounds like my nightmare. Yeah. But I'm sure there's lots of people out there that would enjoy that.
That might enjoy that. All right. Without further ado then, let's get to our spoiler-free review of The Great Season 1.
Let me clue you in.
Season in review.
The Great, an occasionally true story, is an American original period comedy drama series loosely based on the rise of Catherine the Great, Empress of Russia, and premiered on Hulu on May 15th, 2020. The show, adapted from the stage play of the same name, was created and written by RMIT alumni Tony McNamara, 2018 Oscar nominee for his screenplay of The Favourite and known in Australia as writer for TV series The Secret Life of Us, Love My Way, Tangle, Puberty Blues, and creator of Dr. Doctor, of all things, and stars Elle Fanning, Nicholas Holt, Phoebe Fox, Sasha Dewan, Charity Wakefield, Gwillem Lee, Adam Goodley, Douglas Hodge, Belinda Bromlow, Tony McNamara's wife, and Sebastian D'Souza. The Great Season 1 consists of 10 episodes, each coming in at around 52 minutes, and took us approximately 8 hours and 45 minutes to watch. So, before we get into our spoiler-free review, Damask, first of all, how familiar are you with Tony McNamara's previous works? Have you seen The Favourite, for instance? And how familiar are you with Catherine the Great as a historical figure?
I am somewhat familiar with Tony McNamara. Mm-hmm. I have watched The Favourite. Didn't know that he went to RMIT.
Yes.
Like, we both went to RMIT.
Yes.
Different campuses.
Royal Melbourne Institute of Technology. Is that right? Yes.
Mm-hmm, that's right. Well done. Yeah, I think I've really seen The Favourite. Oh, like, you say Secret Life of Us and stuff.
Yes, Secret Life of Us he wrote for. Puberty Blues. I've seen bits of that.
Yeah. So bits and pieces of his Australian TV work. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I just fell in love with The Favourite as soon as I saw it. And in terms of Catherine the Great, I did study classical societies in high school.
Right.
But that was only Greece and Italy. So fuck the Russians.
Never made it to Russia. For me, yeah, I've seen bits and pieces of The Secret Life of Us. I think pretty much the first full first season of Puberty Blues, the full thing of that. I've never seen Dr. Doctor, but I can't avoid the ads, especially around the time of the Australian Open. I love my tennis, and they're always advertising Dr. Doctor like crazy.
Don't watch free-to-air television.
It looks terrible.
Cool.
And the idea that he's somehow behind that makes me either go, I've misjudged that
is
show.
Is that the doctor who's an asshole?
Yes, that
one. Yeah, okay. It's all of them.
It's kind of like the Doc Hollywood thing, I think. I think the premise of the first season is like get sent to the country to be like a country doctor rather than like a big city doctor sort of thing.
Gotcha.
Sounds horrendous. But now that I know that Toby McNamara wrote it, I'm like, am I missing something amazing?
I'm sure we each know about five people who have been in Doctor.
Probably.
Playing it fast and loose with insulting it, but yeah.
And you know what? Even if it isn't quality, I understand needing to work for a paycheck, especially in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, saw The Favourite before the actual Oscars were on. So I got to that when it was nominated and loved it.
Yeah.
Just in a cinema filled with people who were four times my age.
Yeah, it was all boomers when all I went boomers. To the movies. They thought it was just a normal period piece.
And then sitting towards the back and laughing hysterically and having the rest of the theatre be pretty much deathly silent.
I had two old ladies sitting next to Angela and myself, and they got up and one turned to the other, very old, and one just goes, I've never heard the word cunt so many times in my life. And I loved it.
And as far as Catherine the Great, I'm aware of the name.
Yes.
Well that's done. About it.
Mm-hmm.
So, Damask,
mm-hmm.
could you please give us your spoiler-free review of The Great, season
one? Sure, yes. The Great is a show of extremes. You will collide with unimaginable horrors one moment and then farcical japes, as they call them, the next. I love a period piece, the costumes, the sets, that hoity-toity attitude. If you have a show with people in wigs swanning about, the likelihood that I will like it goes up about 25%. Thankfully, The Great takes that and mixes in an acerbic wit, guffaw-inducing performances and a frenetic tone. The show revels in its cast of interesting and complicated characters, grotesque, amusing, emotionally shut off and yearning for more. Everyone is the worst, but you empathise with their individual experience. It's a feat of balance that is mesmerising to watch. As Catherine gathers allies and tries to adapt to Russian life, her sense of purpose grows. However, the show is good to remind us that while the Queen might have purpose, that doesn't mean she is qualified. Privilege and ignorance are not traits only her husband, Peter the Not Quite Adequate, possesses. Will she be a good ruler? No one knows, but you still want the girl to try, because who doesn't love a plot and a scheme? I have seen commentary about the show's length. Does it need 10 plus hours? No, it doesn't. But the time spent in this world is as lavish and hedonistic as those within it. During my first viewing of the show, I was happy to spend as much time in the world as the creators would allow. But I will admit, on my second viewing, I did notice the lag and stagnation in the middle. With a mix of grotesque morality from the past and progressive character traits from the present, a show or film can oftentimes feel disingenuous. However, The Great manages to pull it off thanks to a very clever swatting down of the girl's rule mantra by the brutal reality Catherine and her allies live in. The show doesn't shy away from the fact that wanting power doesn't mean you are qualified for it. Elle Fanning, Nicholas Holt, Phoebe Fox, and everyone else are giving phenomenal performances and makes even the most horrific parts of the show watchable. The Great is well worth your time. Broad.
Beautiful. I'm going to have a hard time adding to what you've said here, really. By the end of episode one, I knew I was going to love The Great because it was hitting the same sorts of notes that I loved about The Favourite. It's not the same by any margin, but it is written. It's so, so well written, witty and naughty and just very, very funny. One of the things I came to really appreciate about the show as I kept watching it was sort of the Shakespearean nature of the language and some of the performances as well, particularly by actress Phoebe Fox, who has a Shakespearean background. And like one of my favorite comedies from Shakespeare is As You Like It, partly because I was in it, but I've seen it on stage a bunch of times. And it just had that, a great performance of like one of Shakespeare's comedies tone to it. I just was loving every bit of that. It's a bit reductive to say, but in trying to like explain what this show is and what makes it so much fun to watch, is it's kind of like, again, this is reductive, a black comedy version of Game of Thrones, or at least, as my little brother Liam put it, Game of Thrones if it was just season 1 to 4 at King's Landing and funny. Like, it's got that whole plotting politics edge to it. It is quite violent. It's quite raw about the realities of the time in terms of violence and sex and that sort of thing. And then you've got, like, the characters of Orlo and Archie are almost like a Littlefinger and Varys sort of plotting politically, manipulating the things behind the scenes. And it was, like, lovely to get that back because that was something I loved for Game of Thrones for so long that just disappeared after a while. Sad. So to be able to have a show that was just that and even, like, better written in some ways was amazing. And sometimes this show is almost just a sitcom. I mean, it's all set with inside pretty much the boundaries of the Winter Palace. And it just feels like what happens if we throw all these personalities and these people together and into one space and then shake them around a little bit, like you would with a sitcom from episode to episode. And I mean that all of that with the greatest praise. It's just so much fun to watch. As you already said, the performances from Elle Fanning as Catherine and from Nicholas Hoult as Emperor Peter in particular are just incredible. Elle Fanning, she has an incredible ability to just say so much with a look. Like, her performance and with the dialogue is excellent, but just sometimes the amount of information you get from the way she will narrow her eyes or do something with her mouth is like, it sounds again reductive, but it's just, there's so much there. She's in such control of her facial expressions. It says so much. And then Nicholas Hoult, I didn't quite realize his range before this. I've seen him in things in the past and I've liked him in. But man, he is having a ball in this.
Yeah.
And for another Game of Thrones comparison, I get a similar enjoyment from him as I got from Joffrey, only much funnier, and I kind of weirdly like Peter more than Joffrey.
It's amazing the turns that happen with a lot of the characters. You're in one vein with them, and then because the actors are given so much to work with, you have the ability in most cases to at least empathize or understand or have moments of like, oh, fuck, how do I care about you? You're a monster. Yeah. When did this happen?
And then I already mentioned Phoebe Fox, as did you. Love her work as Mariel. Just makes every line work with just precision, I think. And it was really good to see Sacha Dhawan as Orlo in something else because we both enjoyed him in the latest season of Doctor Who as the Master. And it was great. I've never seen him before this year, basically. And now I'm getting a lot of Sacha Dhawan and enjoying
He's killing it.
He is. Criticisms-wise, I love the costume and set design. I do wonder sometimes if it's a little bit limited by the lack of varied locations because often the majesty of the Winter Palace can feel very samey from room to room. Sometimes it's hard to tell. It's like, what's the difference between being Catherine's room versus Peter's room versus wherever it might be? And so as we go through 10 hours of this, it can all start to become a bit of a muddy wash, I think. That arguably could be the point as well, though. There are deliberate ideas about being stuck in there like a prison.
The claustrophobia of it all.
And so, like, it's hard for that to be a real criticism. And I do agree, and I hadn't read this criticism from others, but you brought it up. It probably is about two episodes too long, I think.
It is. There's two specific episodes. I'm like, that can at least be one.
It drags out, I would say, a touch around the episode 6 to 8 part.
Yeah.
It chooses to do something with a plot that's not a bad choice. I think it's actually a very good choice in a lot of ways. And it serves a lot of purpose, but it does derail the momentum of the show for a bit and then also has to sideline a couple of characters that I was otherwise enjoying and sort of push them away or make them less interesting all of a sudden. And it's like, you just feel it's like if this was like one episode instead of two or three, it would be just that little bit sharper.
I didn't feel it too much on the first viewing, but that second one, it was very noticeable,
Yeah. But overall, I had a blast with this show and was rooting for our heroes between belly laughs from the delicious dialogue. Huzzah. Damask, what would you give The Great Season 1 out of 5?
I was tossing up between 4.5 and 5 because I had such a good time. I think in the first viewing, I probably would have stopped at 5. Second viewing, I think just because it is stretched out a little too far, I'm probably going to... It's a high one, but a 4.5.
Yeah, I think I'm going to give it a 4.5 as well. Mm. I really, really had a great time with it.
Yeah.
Constantly laughing, just enjoying it from moment to moment, but definitely felt that the drag a little bit towards the middle. And then also feel like it's not perfect. In fact, I'm excited that if we do get a season 2, I think there is room to get even to better, to build on what we've already got and go to places that could be better than the season that we got. Which is exciting to feel, to go like, this feels great, but I also see the potential for this to get even better somehow as it finds its, because every show in the first season is still struggling to find itself and feel like it was kind of getting there by the end of the season. You learn so much. A season two could be amazing.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Before we dive into spoilers, we'd like to ask everyone who enjoys the podcast to please review us on Apple Podcasts. Nothing helps the show to grow more than by throwing 5 stars and maybe a couple of nice words our way. And in a blatant act of theft from the Swapcast podcast, to sweeten the deal, if we reach 25 written reviews on Apple Podcasts, we will finally review Buffy the Vampire Slayer Season 1. We want to do it as much as you guys want us to do it. We would also love you to share Hunting Seasons with friends and family who you think might also enjoy listening. Next week, we'll be back with our review of Killing Eve Season 3. If you'd like to contribute to our discussion of Killing Eve, or if you have any thoughts on The Great that you would like to share, you can write to us or send an audio recording to contact@huntingseasonspodcast.com or find us on Twitter @HuntingSCast. But right now, let's talk spoilers for The Great Season 1.
You're now entering the spoiler zone.
Spoiler warning, from here on, we'll be discussing everything that happens in Season 1 of The Great. Before listening any further, we recommend watching all of The Great up to this point. If you've not yet done so, proceed with caution. There are spoilers ahead. You have been warned.
Deep dive.
It's cool to know other people think about this stuff too.
Normally, we enter the spoiler discussion with like hot topics to talk about, something that's controversial or like a hot take or opinion or something that really want to bite into and talk about in depth. I actually don't have that much to talk about.
No, well, you just asked me off air, you're like, well, what would you like to speak about first? And I was like, I don't know, I just really like it.
Yeah.
To which we both agreed. So if you want something a bit more biting about The Great, I'm not sure you got to get it here.
Most of it was in the criticisms I've given already. Like that's what I've got. And they're barely criticisms. You gave me slightly too much. And it's all stuck in one location, which is maybe thematically on purpose. It's like, I don't know what there's left to say really about this. No. I think you suggested we should go character by character.
Why not? I mean, they're all so good. There's so much there. I think it's the way to do it.
Well, let's start with Catherine, shall we?
Mm-hmm.
What did you make of her as the lead character of this? I think you already mentioned it sort of doesn't just lead into the whole like girl power side of things.
I think like there is a tendency to oversimplify in terms of modern day ideals or politics or like, you know, this feminist kind of girls rule idea that's like put on top of people, generally real life people from the past or stories that take place in the past. And sometimes it just feels a little cheap.
Sure.
And I'm glad a lot of the times they would give you a little bit of that, but then just like shut you down with just the circumstances that our character is in. When the show first started, though, when we see Catherine as this very, very naive, almost ridiculously naive person, I was like, oh, I don't know how much of this I'm really going to enjoy, particularly because I like the show goes on and she's in such a terrible situation with who Peter turns out to be.
Yeah.
I thought it really was going to be like Game of Thrones sometimes was, in which just unwatchable to watch someone be tortured. But thankfully, Catherine is a far more complicated and interesting character than that.
I think there a lot needs to be said or a lot of praise needs to be given to the pilot, the first episode, which does an incredible job of building up everything we need to know about these characters to get us to the place to see the rest of the story go forward. The introduction to Catherine and that naivete and that wide-eye optimism and then just cutting it down multiple times. Mm-hmm. My favorite one being where she asks Peter for permission to build a school. Mm. And he says yes. And then he finds out that it's a school for girls. Yeah. And then instantly we just cut to the school on fire. Mm-hmm. And it was both hilarious in its timing, just the brutality that movement makes you have to like gasp and chuckle a little bit.
Mm.
And it says so much about Peter. It says so much about her situation. And you are on board for the drama of it too. To the point where we get to the point, the bit where she's going to slit her own wrists, it seems like, in her bedroom. Mm-hmm. And then Marion walks in and Marielle walks in and convinces her not to.
Well, she tells her to get a bucket. Vlad, get a bucket and some towels because there will probably be some overflow. I think that's just speaking on that particular moment is what makes this show really bearable, right? Because there's a lot of bad stuff happening.
Yeah.
And generally, I find it very stressful. But what this show does is with every moment of this kind of most horrific thing or something that's truly grotesque is they cut it with humor always. Like, you know, Catherine is in a terrible situation and yet one example is when she's in the library with Peter and they're having an argument. She's like, you know, you're so terrible to me. And it's like, well, it's not like actual blows or whatever. And she's like, no, it is, it is. And then he just punches her in the stomach. And for whatever reason, like, it's just funny. Like
It's got to do with a lot. The way it's framed is incredible as well.
The timing. Yes. But like the performance from each actor. And then like even if at that point you didn't find that amusing, then later you have him saying to her like, oh, I don't know if you remember this, but like last week I punched you and shot your bear. Like it's just so absurd because this is the world they live in, but just it's cutting at every point so you don't get fucking depressed by the situation this woman is in.
I never thought I could be a man that punches his wife. Mm, and yet you are. Like lines like that will do it.
Yeah.
The first time they're post-marriage intercourse, sex, whatever you call it, the way the expectation she's built up for that moment and then the stark reality of that.
Monologue about what making love for the first time will be.
With the slow, like, pan in on her as she does this, just making this magical moment. And
Mariel's reaction of like, hmm.
Mm-hmm. yeah. Just so many moments like that all through. I'm just trying to think of other grotesque moments like that. One of my favorite ones, it's not necessarily hilarious, but the absurdity of it is when she goes to the front lines of the war and she's giving them macaroons. And like, I don't have any hands. And she has to like place it in the guy's mouth with her
I've got the quote here because it was going to be in my side notes.
Sure.
It was when the man says, I have no hands, she says, I'll just pop it in your mouth. So he takes it and she goes, it's pistachio, if that's helpful. It is so, so terrible. So we have her arrive at the palace with such high expectations and all she wants. Like, she understands her role as a queen, as an empress, to be like, I am there to be his loving wife and to bear his children. We're not dealing with a heroine who has great aspirations for herself and then is suddenly like struck down by it. It's just like she literally wants to do the job that she has been born to do. She gets to this situation and has to deal with Peter, who is a monster, somewhat probably seems to be a bit of a sociopath. He is able to have connection, so...
It's funny. It's like I kept trying to figure out what he was, particularly in the pilot. Mm. I think my initial assessment was like he's not necessarily like vicious, right? It's like...
No, he has no boundaries because he's never been taught
that's
them,
it.
Right?
It almost comes from a place of ignorance more than anything else. That is until he is vicious. And you're like, oh, no, this guy is an absolute cunt. It's like there's... That there's a layer to it because there is the ignorance of just him being told his entire life that he's ordained by God and anything he says goes, and wanting to be loved and thinking this is how it has to be and living it like we're getting on to Peter now as a character, but he is fascinatingly complex.
Yeah,
like there is so much to him.
Yeah, absolutely. Like but before we get we there with get there, him, yeah. So, yeah, she wants to do all of these amazing things, but she's struggling to figure out how to do that with Peter because he's so heightened in all of his actions, mm-hmm. whether it comes from a place of happiness or anger. And so she decides, oh, you know, like, I'll make it my mission. I will love him and he will love me and I will, you know, find culture and all these things. Like, so she finds things to do, but it just gets so bad with, like, he becomes abusive and torturous in other types of ways. And it's not until Marielle comes, like we said, on the scene and sparks the idea in her mind that she could be something more. And then we find out it's not, while she purports it to be, I have a greater purpose, like it's fate and all that stuff. Really, the girl just wants some power, and why not when you're in such a powerless situation? And we just watch her become more and more power hungry, but you want her to be, which is what makes it satisfying.
It's always easy to be on her side because the situation is so shit.
Dire.
As is. Yeah. The status quo is terrible. Mm. Even when the show suggests that she's not ready for this and that aspirations...
She has no idea what she's doing.
...are incredibly naive, even if they are... aspirational or you'd celebrate what she wants, she can't necessarily pull that off. Did you enjoy just the way the show built into getting the coup going at first, getting Orlo on board and mm-hmm. then trying to get...
I loved it because at every turn she just really genuinely sucked at it, particularly in terms of trying to seduce Orlo and then just blurting out to him like, oh, like, do you want to join my coup? And he's so terrified and runs away. Just like the farcical nature of it I found really enjoyable.
Yeah.
And I thought, like, well, that's going to fall apart. But then seeing that it didn't, like, people were so desperate as she was for something better that they were able to come together as, like, this ragtag team, like, which one of the things I love in many TV shows is that, like, that chosen family have a ragtag team often of fighting evil. And I dig it. I always dig that.
Some Buffy similarities.
Skibby
there.
Gang.
I like it. Yeah, no, I really enjoyed the way that all unfolded. The bit for me, if we're talking about the criticisms, that where things, it's like I enjoyed this section of the story was when she decides that Peter can somehow be influenced by her and that she can, what she calls her coup of ideas. So mm-hmm. she abandons pretty much the idea of the standard coup where she's going to take power. And maybe she can just
mold him,
make him better, you know, just a bad boy who needs a good woman around to teach him about art and science and those sorts of things. And that, I actually really enjoyed that part. Peter's near-death experience and when she thought she was going to get power and then sort of has to shrink away from that because...
I love that because I didn't know the history. I was like, is that how she got power? I was like, it's way too early in the season for this to be happening. And then as she steps forward and doesn't know what the fuck she's talking about is a huge wake-up call and an important one. Like, it's a great turning point in the season.
Yeah, and it just felt like it's... I was trying to, like, place it over the course of, like, an three-act structure. It's like... the transition for the end of Act 2 and into Act 3 where all the action needs to happen sort of is just a little bit too long. As much fun as it is to spend lots of time with Peter and Catherine together in that part, Leo disappears, becomes a sooky, skulky nothing. And Orlo has this weird side story where he suddenly has murdered a man and has decided he doesn't have glasses anymore. Like, I understand what they were doing with his character, but it just... very clunky, I thought, compared to
it was
other parts
both
of the
show. Sudden and too slow.
Yeah,
with Orlo.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But then leading into the last couple of episodes, the conversation between Catherine and Peter when she outright says that, you know, this is a coup and you should abdicate. That whole talk about the idea of abdication, fuck! It was such a great build up to an excellent conversation between those two characters.
And I love the You'll do what your father wanted you to do. You will have saved Russia. Mm-hmm. And then Peter's
just like...
and you're
shit at this job. And, like, he knows he's not good at this job.
And Peter's just like, save Russia, but save Russia from myself. That's, like, quite a thing to wrap my head around, which I enjoyed the honesty of that conversation, how they were both, like, well, not honesty, but they were both playing each other and putting the cards they wanted out. It was just like, it was a beautiful match to watch, even though Peter was always going to be unmatched.
Because they just are an interesting pair.
They are.
And they are more interesting, the most interesting when they're just fully honest with each other in that moment.
Kind of ship it a little bit.
Well, that's the thing is in some ways.
They're devious in their own ways.
They are. There is undoubtedly something there in either the performances or the way the characters are presented. They're not without some chemistry.
Yes. Absolutely.
Which complicates things, but just makes the show that much more delicious.
Which yes, those episodes where it's mostly those two together, it goes for too long.
Yeah.
But it does build up to that important moment of like, well, there is investment there and there's a development of the relationship that makes you care. Not that like you don't want them to be together because it'd be a fucking terrible thing because Peter is a bad person. But, yeah, you're investing in the relationship because you have had moments of softness. Like, you see him cradled in the statue's arms because it's overshadowed by his dad forever, that type of thing. Like, you do have empathy there and you see, like, the sad, lost little boy whose mum thought he was, like, pure evil, which, like, the planting of that throughout the season is really good. Should we go into Peter then?
Well, I don't know if I've got much left to say about Peter, really. I think we've said a lot of it already. That all those elements, though, make him compelling because as much as he's just this banal version of, like, an evil emperor, there is so much that is informing that if you look under the surface. Of course, his relationship with his father, his complicated relationship with his mother, but the nature of being emperor of Russia. It's super compelling and fun and just so well drawn and so well performed by all the actors. Mm. Are there any bad performances in this show? Does anyone not do a good job, do you think?
No, I don't think so. I mean, they're all pretty fucking amazing. In every scene no matter who was in a scene, I was enjoying watching them play off each other.
How do we feel about Leo?
Leo.
There we go.
When he first came on the scene and that Peach thing happened, and I was like, oh, for fuck's sake, this is ridiculous. But he was fun, and there were like, I really warmed to him quickly. I think there were moments when, after they're meant to have spent a night of love making together, and they're coming back into the dining room where Peter is there, and Leo mentions to her that she should giggle. And she's like, what? That's ridiculous. I'm not doing it. He's like, fine, then I will. And he starts giggling, and just little moments like that, I'm like, this guy's kind of cute and fun, and you can see, like, he's the one warm spot.
Yes.
In all of cold, cold Russia. You're like, of course you'd fall in love with him.
Yeah, I did invest in Catherine and Leo very quickly, especially because God knows she needed something like that.
Yes.
And you want her to be happy on some level or another. And I enjoyed their partnership right up until I didn't, which is where the coup of ideas starts.
When
and
he gets
Leo
annoying, he's like, Muh.
Starts to have a
he made
massive
you come
sock.
And I didn't.
Yeah. There was a bit where he just like threw a jug or something like that, like grabbed a vase and like just threw it against a wall or something, or just batted it off. And I was like, this is very unattractive thing for you to do, Leo. And someone
you're really
just
turning me off, Leo.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
So it was nice when he sort of got in on the whole coup idea and
it's
like came back and it was just like switched him back on. So he had to turn the character off for a couple of episodes. We need to focus on Peter.
He's allowed
back into the story.
They need to give him a reason to like leave.
Could they have sent him off? Would it have made a difference if they just let Leo go somewhere else for a while? Surely there are other places in Russia he could have been for a couple of episodes.
I mean, he has his own estate, so
exactly.
He might need to go back for whatever reason.
I don't think I needed the sulkiness.
No, that's like that and the printing press debacle of like how he totally betrayed her. I was like, that's fucked, man. Like,
it just didn't seem in character. But then again, maybe the idea was, and originally I was like, we're going to find out that he's his own sort of like petty and, you know, he's not the facade that we have gotten to like over the start of the series. But then they switch him back on. He's just Leo again. Because they need him to, they need you to love him. So the end moment hurts.
Yes.
Which.
Did it hurt you, Brad?
Yeah, it did. Surprisingly so. Because when the choice was between Leo and Russia, I was like, Leo's a sook. Get rid of him. But when she went out there to do it, I was like, this fucking hurts now.
Yeah, it was awful. I mean, obviously, you choose Russia.
Oh, obviously.
You do.
you can fight with the Leos.
Exactly. And I think Voltaire, I love that Voltaire is a character in this show.
Oh, yeah.
Is like, you know, he's just another boy with like legs and hair and whatever.
And a cock.
And a cook. but yeah, to see her actually go out and it's just full of really great moments, this show, when she's like, you know, I love you more than anything. But, and he's like, well, let's just stop for a second and just pretend that you've just said the first thing. And it's really beautiful. And obviously they both look at each other and know that they can't stop there and that he has to go and die. But yeah, I wasn't like weeping because I knew it was inevitable.
Yeah.
But it was, yeah, it was a stirring moment.
Agreed. Did he die? We never saw him die on camera.
Oh, he's fucking dead. If he magically comes back next season.
What if he was a spy the whole time? Or what if they turn him into a spy? I'm trying to think of a way to just keep Leo in the show if they wanted to.
He's not coming back.
Okay. If you say so. Any other characters you particularly liked? I'm going to guess Mariel.
I did, but then I didn't. But then I did, but then I didn't, which is what I loved. Mm. Because the actress is amazing. So immediately, like, I fucking love this chick. I want her in...
Phoebe Fox?
Yes. I want her in everything.
I want her in everything. I kept trying to think, what have I seen you in? The answer is nothing.
Mm.
She's just one of those characters. Like, she's just so immediately great. You're like,
I've
love
known you.
You
forever.
Yeah, pretty much.
You know, she's absolutely incredible. But I loved, you know, on the rewatch, looking back at it, before you really know who she is in the very first episode, you find out that Mariel, while can be a great or possible friend / companion for Catherine, is never going to sacrifice herself or anything that she values for Catherine. Like, it's just not going to happen. Like, in the beginning when Catherine wants to, like, try and escape, and obviously her and Vlad tell the Emperor that she's in that giant box.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, well, obviously. But I loved that. And I loved her relationship with Archie, which was such a wonderful complication because...
Yes.
While I hated the fact that she kept, like, choosing him or going back to him or having loyalty to him, whenever they were in a scene together, I fucking got it. You could see the love and the care between them, even though he was such a repulsive character almost in every other scene except for when he was with her.
The thing is, he is, but it's like... And this is something I love about the characters in general, is it still wasn't like mustache-twirling bad guy, right? It's like,
but at
I
the
truly...
beginning, you think he is because he does like that whole flame thing and he's like the fingers and all that stuff.
All of it,
you're
gross.
Like, he's going to be disgusting.
And celebrating like when Catherine like bites the fingers and stuff earlier. It's like, that's such an awesome moment because fuck you, Archie.
Yeah.
But I also truly believe...
There's so much more there.
That mostly he believes what he's doing, even if like he does go into the wild and go on that drug trip to try and have a vision. Like it's like there's something about he truly is authentically what he says he is.
Yeah.
That does not mean he's not political or anything like that, or it's not nefarious in his own ways, but he is genuinely representative of the church and his beliefs. And it's like there's a certain amount, it's not respect, is not the right word, but you that's it's great
there's
that that's
almost true. Integrity.
Integrity maybe
the
is the word
that
for
he
it.
Is- Yeah, he does believe
Catherine
those
recognizes
things.
That too. When they're talking about having to kill Archie and Mariel's like, don't you fucking dare, I'll stab you 9 times in your fat fucking face, something like that.
Fucking brutal sometimes, yeah.
Catherine says he's a political animal, he will reason. And
I think
if things worked out the way that she envisioned, that would have been true.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's like as soon as Orlo and Archie are locked in that room together and Orlo tells him that, you know, it's over, like that means Peter's dead, although that's not the situation as far as we know it. Archie immediately goes like, oh, well, what about Elizabeth?
Is that Elizabeth? Yeah.
It's like, so he is a political creature and he's like thought about it and he's, you know, thought like 3 moves ahead of how things might work out for him because it's important for him. Well, yes, he sincerely believes in his religious beliefs. He is a political being and power is important in that time. So, yeah, I find him fascinating as much as, like, early on I was like, oh, okay, this is the bad guy. As we go on, he's not the bad guy. It's way more complicated than that.
Way more complicated than that. Yeah, I love that as well. And, yeah, I agree. The relationship between him and Mariel is fascinating. And those actors, those performers make those scenes work so you believe it. Because it does seem a little overly, like, convenient that she has this connection to one of the bad guys that just keeps making her work against Catherine all these significant moments. I just loved every scene with Meryl, though. Just her dialogue is incredible.
She's great.
She's a perfect side to our lead, I think.
Yes.
A willow? She's not really a willow. What'd you call her?
No, she's not a willow at all. She's like an Anya, maybe? Or
No, she's not. Oh, an Anya. Yeah, an Anya. Yeah. I agree with that. Okay. What about Orlo? Did you like Orlo as a character?
I did. I really did. I mean, there were moments when after he had killed a man that I was like, and I knew the point was that I was meant to be rolling my eyes at him, but I just loved soft, cute teddy bear Orlo before that, that I was like, I don't need him to have this silly hard edge or for him to take himself so seriously now in that way. But I loved his cute friendship with Catherine, particularly, I think it's in the last episode, yeah, when it's her birthday and the coup is happening. And it's stupid, but when they're walking outside and they're all like walking in a line together and he just comes in, he's like, oh, hey, everyone, happy birthday, Catherine. I was like, this is just a really cool group of friends. they really seem to like each other. No, I really like Orlo. I find it's rousing to see someone who has such conviction but also has had to quieten his heart for so long to now have the opportunity. I really enjoyed that.
I actually think he's the Willow now that I think about it, because he's the one with all the smarts and stuff.
He's the Willow.
Giles-y type character. Anyway.
No, he's Willow. Totally. Yeah.
I think one of my favorite moments in the last episode with him is actually where he goes to they're trying to get the aristocrats on their side for the coup so they won't have the district sort of rebel against them, whatever, if they go through with it. And that conversation he has, I can't remember the guy's name, who's eating the pork, right?
Disgusting.
But he gets him on board and it's just like, I don't know, there's something about the performance, the way he like finishes his drink and then does this little like fist, and it's like he's a true believer in the cause ultimately, always has been, and like to have this opportunity and to get the grow the chutzpah to do it, I guess.
What I actually enjoy about that scene is that, yes, he oh, no, that's a different scene that I'm thinking of.
What one are you thinking of?
No, because there's one when he tries to get the army guy and he's talking about how Catherine is different or whatever. And I think in terms of the aristocrat who's eating the pig, he goes in and he's, you know, he's the guy who can, like, tell people, like, what her beliefs are, why she's different, how she can make a change. But he literally sits down with that guy and he's like, say, you know, hypothetically, right, if someone was to take control that wasn't Peter, like, what would your feelings about that be? And the guy was like, I don't give a fuck. Give me like 2 million rubles at rubles. Rubles?
Rubles,
whatever.
I think.
And a port, and it's fine. And he's just kind of like, oh, okay, that was that's so much easier than I thought it was. You can just buy people. Great. Yeah, I enjoyed that.
Velimentov, you mentioned the army guy, was a character that I found far more compelling and interesting than I initially thought. There's just the drunk general who obviously had a talent and that was being ignored by Peter and had this infatuation for Catherine, but that was about it. He was sort of just a joke.
Yeah.
And then we spend some time with him and understand his position on things, and then finally, and like there's a conversation he's having with the general from the Swedish army as well. They're talking about like seeing the graduates from the academy and stuff like that, and then imagining what's going to be like for them when they first get out onto the battlefield, and understanding there's quite a lot going on inside. And the conversations he has with Catherine when he finally comes around to, you know what, fuck it, I mean, sort of thing. He was much more layered and interesting than you didn't need to do that with Velimentov, I don't think. And it was so satisfying that it was there.
Yeah, I thought he was just going to be the gross, creepy older uncle type who was like constantly trying to get his hands on her or like give her gross, greasy kisses, etc.
The easy thing to do was to have him on board just because he's infatuated with Catherine. Yeah. I thought that's what's going to happen. Mariel, I think, maybe says, or possibly Orlo, I can't remember. Someone suggests just have sex with him. You'll get him on board.
Mariel,
like, it'll take you 15 minutes. Yeah. It's like, it'll take you five minutes.
Yeah, she'll be like, everyone you'll be done by 9:15. Actually, 9:05. Yeah,
exactly.
Absolutely. But I love the kind of the moment where you realize, while you might think of any character to be a joke because they are generally funny. There's a moment when they're in the carriage together, Catherine and what's his name? Velimentov. Are in the carriage together and she's like, you know, I'm talking about like revolution, like come join me or whatever. And he's like, you're playing a dangerous game. She's like, you won't betray me. He's like, you don't know that.
Yeah.
And he stops the carriage and he leaves because she doesn't fucking know that. And she's like,
He has real wisdom.
He's been there before. He's seen some real shit. Yeah. And I thought that was a really, really important moment. Yeah.
Agreed. Other characters I'm trying to think of, there's George and...
Yes, that's something I found fascinating.
Go on.
I have never seen a more complicated relationship. Good Lord. At first... When it starts, this is what this show does. I had so many like first thoughts about
preconceptions.
Yeah, thank you about all of these characters. And as we went, I was like, "Oh, it's there's so much more than that." Grigor and George are just that. I thought this poor couple, this poor woman, she's having to relinquish her body, betray her marriage in order to keep the emperor on side, but really she's betraying herself, and isn't that terrible? And then as we go on, we realize that she wants to be having sex with Peter. She is very happy to be doing that. She does love her husband very much, but it's more complicated than that. It's more interesting than that. She wants to have this polyamorous relationship. Like, she is living a great life. Poor Grigor, though.
Yeah.
Watching that man slowly get smaller and smaller and smaller, but he also genuinely loves Peter as well.
Yeah.
It's just, I was just like, every time the three of them, or even like two of them in either kind of pairing, it was just fascinating.
It was just
with every scene, I just learned more about the complexity to their relationship.
I'm really glad they gave Peter friends like this to have,
because
it would have been very easy to have him be friendless, a lot of people faking their affection for him, or just servants or whatever around him that are just gonna yes men basically. But he genuinely has a very complicated but a real connection to these two people, and nothing more apparent than when they who's the guy that Rostov or whatever it is the guy that gets into
that
his
Mariel sends
to kill him, and they both without hesitation go straight through this guy, just slaughter him there.
Learn to read a room. As Peter stabs him. Yeah.
Yeah. They truly, truly love him, as complicated as that whole thing is. I love the moment also with Grigor when he finally
yes.
Like, I think Peter's eating the peach or the pear.
It's a pear. I hate the way you eat pears.
It's so funny. And then,
but the way that Nicholas Holt is eating that pear is absurd. Yeah, it's gross.
Oh, I wish I remember Peter's lines. Like, he's like, you are being fucking weird, and it must stop, cease immediately, or something like that.
That's pretty much it. Yeah.
And then Grigor explains. Yeah, you know, he doesn't like him having sex with George.
Like, a piece of me burns away every time.
And then he's like, oh, wait, so you really do, because he's been telling this whole time he doesn't mind, you really do mind? Well, I'll stop doing it. And the confusion and the relief and what has happened here on Grigor's face, even up to the point where Peter says, or maybe just twice a year.
Yeah.
And it's like, I think he's like calculating, like, I could deal with that.
Yeah.
That would be actually, that would be much better than the current situation. It's all there, though. It's all there.
But even I was like, I had such relief for Grigor at that. But then later, it was after that, I'm quite sure that George is talking to Grigor about how, you know, he's married to a complicated woman and that she likes it. But he's asked the emperor to stop. So you know that Peter probably will stop.
Yeah.
And that's something interesting that will probably be discussed in season two. I'm looking forward to.
Elizabeth.
Yes. Ooh, yes.
Peter's aunt.
Mm-hmm.
A really excellent character to have in terms of having someone of high status as a woman and also quite experienced in the whole court. In fact, in reality, that she was the queen or the Empress before Peter was.
She was, yeah.
That was essentially that character. Like, there's a lot. The thing is, this is the thing as well. It's like, it's such a loose
version. The person
version
with that name, but not the character.
Not the exact character, yeah. But kind of the same relationship. It's like the whole thing's complicated. In fact, Peter the Great was not Peter's father. It was Peter's grandfather.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, anyway. So very loosely based on history.
Yeah.
She's wonderful. Her, obviously, just her, like, sexual, what would you call it?
Appetite.
Mm. And just the fantasy and the, like, she's, yes, very, very educated and interesting in that regard. But then her relationship to Peter and to Catherine, and then finally with a revelation when she realizes that Catherine is the one who is coming for Peter, and that decision she has to make where she, after all this time, is all about protecting her bloodline.
Thankfully, Catherine's pregnant.
Thank God Catherine's pregnant.
Otherwise,
at that moment.
Catherine would have been fucked.
Yeah, absolutely fucked. Just the way she has to calculate those things. And especially when she kills Ivan, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Like, finding out that she had done that to her own blood as well.
I didn't think she was going to do that.
I didn't imagine that was within her as well.
Yeah, because she is this kind of ditzy, almost like insane character that floats around the palace with butterflies following her. But then the realization that it's most like, I mean, there's a part of it that's true. Like, she does have a soft, fairy-like nature about her, but it's also, a lot of it is just a game that she's playing in order to maintain her own safety by seemingly being totally unthreatening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or just by being, her persona is being crazy, is being mad.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, oh, don't worry about her. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. I love that character, and I love where they're going with that character potentially into next season as well. The kiss on Catherine's cheek I thought was very Judas-y, and I thought she was going to betray him to Peter, and then to just have her goodbye before she goes to the country to get out of there. But
smart move. Get out.
The last thing we see is Archie chasing after her before she gets in her carriage.
Mm-hmm.
Setting up, you would expect her to be the other option in season two, which I'm trying to imagine her and Catherine as adversaries. And that would be very, very, with like her and Archie basically versus Catherine.
It'd be like Elizabeth and Mary, Queen
yeah,
of Scots.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
If they want to go that. That's a good thing. It's like, it's not beholden to history, obviously. So they can really do what they want, which is super fun. Yeah. Because obviously, like, I know a tiny bit because after I watched the show, I was like, what is true? And so I looked up little bits and stuff. I was like, but now I know it's not spoilers.
That's the thing.
Which
it's
is
not
beautiful
spoilers because there's a lot of things from the little bits that I've read that don't seem like they're going to happen that way at all.
Yeah.
For instance, in real life.
Tell people this just in case.
I don't think, I mean, it's history for real life and this show is already going, you know, to do its own thing.
Yeah, it's way off. Yeah.
We all know, surely we all understand that Catherine becomes Catherine the Great.
What? Yes.
Right? So she's going to become, or we would assume she's going to become Empress at some stage in this show. It's a question of whether it happens right now or it's going to be more complicated or what it's going to be. But in reality, the coup happens on Peter, and then Peter died about a week later of stroke, I think.
Well, they don't really know.
They don't really know.
They think it might be a guard, or maybe he just happened to die a week after a coup.
But that's what happened.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen. That's not what's going to happen in this story. Mm-mm. Peter is probably going to be removed from the throne. Catherine, I would assume, is going to take over immediately after we get back to the show.
I hope he's just in a little room
that's
somewhere.
That's exactly what I think is going to happen.
And Catherine goes and visits him every now and again.
He's
going to
be
great
there.
Great chat. Yeah.
Yeah. That's exactly how I think it's going to be. I don't think it can last like that, but I think we get a whole other season of Nicholas Holt as Peter in that exact regard. Talking to her about the problems with power, as you know, being this wealth of information, even if it's tainted by his weird worldview and like banal evil nature.
Yeah, because if in this world his dad is Peter the Great, then like what a person to have when you're taking over Russia is the son of Peter the Great and all the things he knows about, like his internal world.
Was there something else about the way history actually went down that you were anticipating was going to change or you're looking forward to seeing?
Oh, things changing. I'm not sure. It was just simply, I assumed that they would probably get Peter to abdicate the way that he did in real life and then hold him in a room.
Yeah.
would be my thing. And just, yeah, just not kill him as quickly.
Yeah. They don't even have to kill him at all. If they wanted to, they could, like, fake his death and then he can go off and go somewhere else, go live in Sweden with the King of Sweden
his
over there.
Friend.
His best friend over there. Or, well, like, there's a lot really. Of options for that sort of stuff, I think. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be fun.
Any last words?
Final thoughts.
That's why you always leave a note.
Do you have any side notes, Damask?
I do. Just a couple of quotes that we haven't mentioned already. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the greatest one, which was, "How's your evening? Avoided rape, you? Same." That was...
With the follow-up line, if they invented something easier than buttons, then we'd all be in trouble.
Yeah. Accurate. Here's one where Catherine says to Marielle, "I thought I was here for a reason, a purpose." To Marielle responds, "Why did he make you a woman then?" Catherine says, "Comedy," which is also accurate.
Absolutely.
I also love the absolute ignorance and privilege shown by Catherine when, I think this is when she's about to kill herself, and she says to Marielle, her servant, "What am I to do? Live at someone else's whim?" Which I love, to which Marielle responds, "God forbid." Yes, and then I just had the great line of, "You probably don't remember this, but a week ago I shot your bear and punched you," which I just think is wonderful. Anyway, your turn.
A lot of lines. And that literally, like, there's like half a dozen here. I could have gone for pages.
Oh, me too.
Just incredible lines
of
dialogue.
If I wasn't so engrossed in actually watching the show two times over in like a week and a half, by the way,
sure,
I would have just written down lines, but I was just enjoying watching it.
Is this a coup or a fucking book club? I suppose we should kill him, but he is family and we are sentimental. You would like to be loved. I am loved. Someone tried to kill you. That was great. This one from Peter I loved as well. Fucking paintings. Who knew?
As he cries,
he's
yeah.
crying. Looking at painting. Fucking love that. You have a lot of guards. Indeed, fucking come for me and you die a lot first. And just Catherine's lie in the last episode as well. It's Voltaire. How would that look when she was playing out killing Peter in front of Voltaire? I also loved one of my favorite gags that wasn't dialogue, actually, is when they have the Swedish like representative or ambassador or whatever over, and they're playing to like kill him and take his head.
And like finger across the throat. Yeah, I was losing it.
So good.
Because how do you tell someone to like... Don't do it without like the cutting someone's
It's so amazing.
It really,
set up.
Really tickled me a lot. Even on the second viewing, I was laughing just as hard. It was fucking hilarious.
It is incredible.
I forgot about that.
And just amusing and going back to something we talked about a couple of episodes ago when we were talking about Never Have I Ever. This is how you seed season two. But don't make it the final moment, right? The final moment of this episode is the most important moment. The stuff about season two got seeded earlier with Archie and Elizabeth. It's just mentioned. We understand it's there. If there isn't season two, we'll get to it.
Yeah.
You don't make that the thing you end on. You make the moment of Catherine and the gun going off and whatever that means, that's your moment. That's what you ended on. I was just like, that's how you do it. Anyway. Least favorite and favorite episode. What was your least favorite episode, Damask? You've watched this twice. I'm fascinated to hear what this
is. Yes. So I was really kind of... there's no bad episodes. I want to say that.
Zero bad episodes.
Up front. No bad episodes. But I was feeling the kind of sense of stagnation a little bit. Things weren't quite as bitey or fun or well-paced as previous episodes. So I was tossing up between 6 and 7. Ultimately, I went with episode 7, A Pox on Hope. While, yes, the death of Vlad was very sad and the plight of serfs was a great motivation for Catherine moving forward, the sadness of Leah, as we spoke about before, over Catherine's sexy times with Peter was just a bit boring. And yes, obviously, with Orlo's whole... I killed a man.
Yeah.
Story. Was that, am I right?
Yeah.
What about you?
It's exactly the episode I chose as well. Episode 7, A Pox on Hope. Feeling the limitations of the 10 hour long episodes, transition for Act 2 to Act 3 is being stretched out. While not all valueless, Leo and Orlo in particular are suffering as they are being sidelined to allow more time to dwell on Catherine's coup of ideas. B, barely a criticism, I think. It's really was still a good episode. There was something else as well. That's the episode where she does her speech and has that moment about inoculating herself. Mm. And it's like we kind of have these three speeches that happen, right? There's the three moments. There's the one where she thinks she's taking over as Empress and then completely fucks it up.
Mm-hmm.
In front of, like, the council or whatever. Then there's this one where she, like, is finding her voice but does not get through to her people.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally we have the one after Peter tortures the entire court, which is hilarious and fucking crazy. But
Archie's such a fucking psycho, anyway.
Yeah.
With the nipples.
Have my eyeballs. you give me your eyeballs. It's not him. I also love that when she gives him the finger after she's had the nail.
Mm-hmm. Ugh, makes me want to
fucking
vomit.
So good though. But this sorry, just to dwell on this for a second.
Mm.
It's such a funny show, but I totally got into moments like that. Like I was invested in.
Oh, genuinely.
As silly
yes.
as it kind of is, genuinely excited at moments when characters would. Yeah, have a moment like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, she has the speech.
No, I was never out. The humor never took me out of the world.
That's
which is wonderful.
That's what's kind of amazing about yeah. it. Is it could just
be a farce.
It brought
me further in because I was like, these people live in such a absurdly horrific time.
Yeah.
Of course, they'd have a sense of humor about it because that's just kind of you got to live.
Mm. Do you think like it's? Almost, it's somehow it's balancing on the teetering on the edge of Blackadder. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it's yeah. right there.
Yeah.
But it doesn't fall completely mm-hmm. into that. It stays on the side where you can still get invested in the story.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought of another bit that I loved where they find Tata Nick dead in the fountain and they're talking about
yeah.
how the fountain's a death trap.
yeah.
And then
they're
like, it's cursed. It's like, you should be worried that someone's coming for you. It's like, this other person died last week. And then Archie and Elizabeth are both there. They just go, but yeah, Catherine has the speech after the torturing and that's like, she finally gets that right. She has her big moment finally. Favorite episode?
Oh, I don't know because I liked so many of them. I was like, the pilot is amazing. The
pilot is exceptionally good.
I really, really enjoyed that. But then I was like, episode two, I was like, oh, it just gave me more of what I really enjoyed in the pilot.
Mm-hmm.
I loved the final episode. I thought it was a great way to end it. Wrapped it all up perfectly. I guess the pilot. I don't know. I really fucking love this show. So any of them, really. But I'll say pilot, whatever.
I could easily have gone the pilot. I often give it to pilots because I often find that they can be very successful. Mm-hmm. Pilots or last episodes tend to be the ones.
Yeah.
I think the pilot, what's great about it is it could almost, like, it stands on its own. Like, if you just got that and the story ends with her deciding she's going to become Empress, mm-hmm. it's like, that's like a short film that you've just done and it was very effective at getting us to that moment. Everything we need is there.
Mm.
But I'm going to give my favorite episode to episode 8, Meatballs at the Dacha.
Oh, God, that was fun.
Fucking really fun.
Ah, but then also like really informative. And
yeah.
I was like, good choice, my friend.
It takes what has been that little bit of a slowdown and like gets everything back on track mm-hmm. in excellent fashion. It's a great episode of Catherine's ability.
Mm-hmm.
And now she has Velimentov, so you can get the coup in motion. So everything's moving. We have all that great Velimentov stuff. And also, it's just very, very, very funny episode for Peter and the King of Sweden. The show
watching
was just
them
doing...
them fight on the table is like, obviously no one can intervene because they're royalty.
Yeah.
So it's great.
Peter, tell us, can you control your staff? Shut up, Olaf. yeah, no, that was just, for me, was just like the show being amazing. It's like, I can imagine more episodes like that in the future.
And I love the reality that was brought to Catherine by the Queen of Sweden.
Yes.
Just being like, if you educate the people, then you educate them to realize that they don't need us or nor should they want us at all. It's like, well, yeah, true.
Predictions, hopes, and concerns for a season 2.
I hope there is a season 2. I hope it's just as good. My worry is that, like Killing Eve, perhaps I hope the showrunner doesn't leave or anything to work on other projects. I hope that they don't focus too hard on the pithy kind of humor that people are like, oh, that's really cool. That's a reason why it's great. Because, yes, that is a great reason that the great is great.
Great.
Fuck.
Yep. Beautifully said.
Beautiful. Put that on the poster. But so what happened with Killing Eve was they forgot about putting in interesting characters and interesting storylines, and it just became about like these kind of cool, funny things to say, and it lost all of what actually made it cool and funny. And I worry about that.
Sure.
Yes.
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
So, in terms of talking about the next season, it hasn't been announced yet. However, this comes from a article from L.com, E-double-L-E or L-E?
L.
As in Elle McPherson? Yeah.
Not as in L. No, it's got nothing to do with her. But as in Elle Fanning.
As in Elle Fanning. That's better. There we go. Fanning admitted to Entertainment Tonight, Tony's definitely thinking about season two. So this is Tony McNamara talking about, which is good. He has some idea. Without divulging details, the actress confirmed, if they wanted to do it, I would do it right away. It also seemed that Holt is involved. Variety reported the actor exited the upcoming seventh Mission Impossible movie because filming overlapped with the production of season two of The Great.
Good move, that's my man.
Fucking fascinating, because he was meant to play the villain in that role.
It's Nicholas now Holt.
Nicholas
was.
Holt, yep. Mm. As he's been recast because he apparently wants to be doing The Great, which, very cool move, mm-hmm. I think. I mean, I wonder.
I mean, I'm sure he couldn't get out of it.
I don't necessarily.
If they were already filming.
No, it says the overlap with the production of season two. So that's the planned production, because I don't think they've started filming the Mission Impossible yet. I don't know. But like, if he was negotiating that, he would have had some idea of things. Mm. Maybe he couldn't get out of it. I also wonder if actors are choosing some of these things because, A, it's a great show, brilliantly written. Why wouldn't you want to be on it?
Mm.
But also because it's like there's security in a show that could go for six seasons, which apparently he has planned.
Mm-hmm.
It was initially pitched as six seasons, rather than being that one Mission Impossible film where your villain dies at the end and like you get a paycheck, but that's it. I don't know. But I think it's probably going to happen. It's getting great reception.
Woohoo!
Hulu's doing some good work at the moment.
Mm.
I wonder if this could almost become like comedy Game of Thrones. They're going to throw a slightly bigger budget at it. They'll start to go to other places, introduce more characters, that sort of thing.
Don't make it too fresh big, that way. Though. Please don't.
I don't want to see big battles and armies and shit like that. It should always just be about the politics and stuff like that. But I do hope they can get out of the Winter Palace a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
She's no longer beholden to the Emperor, I'm sure they can do that.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what I hope for. I assume we're going to get the Archie Elizabeth stuff, and I think that's great because I love those two characters, and they'll make excellent foils. The idea of keeping Peter around just in a side room somewhere sounds great.
Pet.
Yeah.
As her bear, her new pet
could,
bear.
Could he be let back out into the court in some way? I don't know if that really works, but if he abdicates, why not? That was what she offered him. You could just eat and fuck, and he was like, that sounds pretty good.
And hang out with your kid, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I know I want more.
Yeah, me too.
That's all I really, really know.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Hunting Seasons. You can find more of what we do via our website, huntingseasonspodcast.com. Our logo comes from Sean Kirkpatrick, a.k.a. at Shawnee Boy Draws, and our theme song and bumpers from Lucas Heil of Birthday Loyalty Club. Find links to their work in our show notes. You can also find myself, Broderick Gordes, on Twitter at bgordes, B-G-O-R-D-E-S, Damask.
You can find me at Twitter at Maskymoo, MaskyMoo. Also got a new podcast called Seizing Up, available now.
Check that out. Next episode, as we said, we'll be back to discuss Killing Eve Season 3. In the meantime, thank you again for listening. We'll see you next time. Bye for now.
Bye.
Good night, everybody.
And so,